Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 9th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's out of Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the chairman of the House Ag Committee has released his version of the 2007 Farm Bill markup. There's another call for payment limitations. And finally, three grain organizations say do not change the grading standards for soybeans. I'll have details of these stories later in the half hour. After that, we'll hear about glyphosate-resistant water hemp. Unofficially, it's in the state of Illinois. And don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on this Monday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Taking a look at the numbers from Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this in the nearby wheat. July contract at 588.5, down 12 cents today. September's at 599.5, we're off 10.5. And December wheat futures for the soft red down 9.5 cents at $6.13 a bushel. July corn futures were down 2 at 332.5. September's at 339.25, we're down 2.25. And December contract at 350.25, down 1.75. July futures $8.70, up 5.25. August in the bean pit up 6.25 at 875.5. And November beans at $9.02, up 6 cents for the day. July bean meal futures finished $3 higher at $236.90, and July bean oil at $37.32, up 0.19 for the afternoon. August feeder cattle, 114.47.5. They were down 22.5 cents today. August live cattle at 92.52.5, up 2.5 cents. And the October futures up to 27.5 cents at 97.17.5. July lean hogs 77.5 cents lower at $70.55 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, crude oil trading the nearby August contract at 72.17, down 64 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 49 points higher at this hour at 13,660 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Port of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing on Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace in Chicago, in particular about the lower move in the wheat pit.
Well, the wheat pit was kind of interesting. It held in there until late in the session. And what we saw is, got in that last 10 minutes or so, the market sort of fell on spillover pressure from the Kansas City. Kansas City was lower on a drier forecast for the Western Belt. Ideas would see a little bit more hedge pressure. And the commercials were sellers there to keep the Kansas City under pressure. KC down 11 to 12 cents versus Chicago around 9. But once the Chicago broke the 20-day moving average, we saw funds come in and be sellers on the day. And that's sort of what drove the market lower late in the session. Export inspections was kind of disappointing. We shipped out about 10.8 million bushels of wheat. Trade was looking for about 18 to 21 million. But I would imagine tomorrow the wheat, about another 5 to 8 load, will start to find support as we start to focus on the world numbers on Thursday's USDA report. Wheat in general continues to see a very tight global situation. And so until we get into next spring, I have a feeling that pullbacks in the wheat is going to be somewhat supportive until we see this demand slow down or world acreage pick up.
Yeah, world agricultural and supply and demand estimates due out at 7:30 Thursday morning, along with USDA's July crop production numbers. Those really only update the crop production, that is, the numbers for the wheat, but really don't take a look at corn or soybeans at all, do they?
Well, on the corn and beans, they'll plug in the new acreage numbers they came up with on the June acreage report. They might dinker with the yield a little bit. ideas are trade sort of focusing on about 153 bushel on the corn yield, and they've got a little additional bean yield to work with. But the bottom line on the report is, from what we're gathering, is the corn supply-demand balance sheet's going to show larger stocks, and the bean supply-demand balance sheet's going to show smaller U.S. stocks. The big report of all will be the August report, where they actually take their first field surveys.
Absolutely. Tell me about the soybean market for the day. A gain of, 6 cents in the noves, and they settled above $9.
Oh, boy, all over the board. Overnight, we're almost 10 lower, and saw the market finish about 5 lower in the early morning trade, then came back and picked up there once we started the 9:30 trade here in Chicago. But a little negative tone in the beans starting out, just forecast a little cooler weather and a chance of some rain. Some forecasters had an inch rain event here Tuesday, Wednesday. Then midday maps were somewhat drier, took the rain event back down to a quarter to three quarters type of coverage. It's going to be kind of hit and miss the way we understand it. You'll probably get a better forecast here this afternoon, but sort of still in the weather market, until these beans get some rains here as we go into August. Beans are still considered a weather market, per se. But overnight, Malaysia palm oil was about 3 ringgits lower, but world vegetable oils continue to remain strong. So our bean oil market remains strong, and even the meal market was strong. The product sort of helped the beans stay up there. The November bean closed above the magic number of $9. We were able to finish $9.02. The key would be to follow through here. Some traders believe that this close above $9 sort of opens the door to run to $9.50 over time. But beans ought to hold their own with the idea that the ending stocks number could be down around the 200 million bushel on Thursday morning's USDA supply-demand report.
You know, you say a run to 950 in the futures market over time. As you talk to farmers and elevator operators and commercials, do they think that the cash side can maintain that, or will it widen out even more than it already has?
No, you'll continue to see the wide basis news hit the market here with old crop supply-demand balance still showing ample old crop supplies, and they'll want to continue to make room for the new crop. So we're going to continue to see the commercials widen the basis on rallies in through here. So as a producer, it's going to be kind of frustrating here for a while to try to get sales off a higher level.
Yeah, I know you take up both the futures and the cash side of the marketplace. What do you do with cash soybeans on the spot bids on the old crop at this point?
Well, at this point, you're sort of a tight holder here. You sort of got to cringe and see if we can't squeak some higher values out. When you look at the big picture in through here, seasonally, this is the time window where we get some weather rallies, concerns in the bean market. So you got to use this strength in here to get to where you want to be. Because over time in through here, seasonally, once we do receive rains, the market turns lower. The tendency is to move lower until we get in the middle of August. So as a producer, you got to sort of watch it daily, if not hourly, and through here to try to get this stuff priced here between now and 1st of August.
Tell me about the corn market.
Corn lower overnight, forecasted some rain, cooler temperatures. Here in the Eastern Belt, producers are starting to be a little bit more comfortable with corn production estimates. Saw some hedge pressure come in. The Western Belt, especially that Minnesota, Iowa area, Dakotas, they're starting to hurt quite a bit. This afternoon's crop condition report, I imagine that's where you're going to see the drop out of the good to excellent category pretty big time in those areas, where the rest of the country is going to be kind of mixed. But corn's in a position to sort of consolidate. Man, we're about a buck off the high, and I was really impressed with the market action going home Friday with the ability to sort of carve out some lows there. And also looking back on last week's trade, we saw quite a bit of new demand come to the marketplace, not only from the export side, but we had the domestic feeders coming forward, gathering a little coverage. And there's some ethanol pricing, too, that last week flows there, too, Todd.
It's probably important to note all of that came in the week after a Friday release of a really big number from USDA on acreage on the June 29th. And then on Friday even, Informa coming out with a number that said 13.3 billion bushels for the corn crop yield this year, total across the nation. And still the marketplace said, yeah, but we think low enough is low enough at this point.
For now. I mean, we could probably drift lower over time, but that's the function of the market, to go lower here and seek out demand, and that's what's going to continue to support the corn market long term. One thing we're watching is these deferred contracts, and what I mean by that is the December 08 corn futures, the December 09 futures, and the December 10 futures there. As long as they hover around this $4 level, that sort of tells us they're still concerned long term. Now, if that back end would ever give up, I think that would be a major warning to the corn producer.
Tell me about the mercantile exchange for the day, where we had a pretty good day in the live cattle pit, but mixed otherwise in the hogs.
Yeah, in the cattle pit, we saw some hedge lifting. There was some higher cash bids there Friday, anticipation that we're going to see some cash trade move up into this 90-cent area. So there's some optimism there. We could have a pretty good balance on the cash side. Index funds did the spreads here of the October, August. We're going to start seeing some quite a bit of rolling take place here over time. In the hog pit, once again, the roll taking place as they move on out to the October. They did about 5,000 in that spread over the day. Cash market was kind of mixed, lower in some areas, higher in some other areas. We'll probably keep an eye on this day-to-day demand here as we go through the summer holiday time frame.
We appreciate you being with us, Kurt.
Very good.
Hey, Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Just after the bottom of the hour, the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Here's Mike Sola's forecast for tonight across the two-state region in Illinois and western Indiana. Partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms this evening. In the rest of Indiana, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 65 in the north to 73 in the far south. Tuesday, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy, says Mike, with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 84 in northwestern Illinois to 91 in southeastern Indiana. Dew point temperatures will climb into the low 70s tomorrow. The minimum relative humidity levels will range from 52% in eastern Indiana to 45% in northwestern Illinois. Wind speeds about 10 to 15 miles an hour. Some gust up to 25 miles an hour. The heat index values will drop into the low to the mid-90s. A widespread quarter-inch rainfall expected. Some half to three-quarter-inch totals are likely as well. The extended forecast says precipitation in the forecast through midweek, and then cooler northwesterly flow will help to trigger occasional showers and thunderstorms. In today's agricultural news, late Friday night, House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson released his chairman's mark for full consideration. Peterson intends to maintain and reinforce a strong safety net for U.S. farmers by extending the safety net programs of the 2002 Farm Bill with only minor changes. According to the information released, Peterson plans to continue support through direct payments and increase target prices for wheat, barley, oats, oilseeds, and soybeans. The mark also increased loan rates for several crops to reflect changes in the market for those products. Rebalancing loan rates for wheat, barley, oats, oilseeds, small chickpeas, and graded wool. Well, a congressman is making a call for payment limitations. Nebraska Representative Jeff Fortenberry has urged the House Ag Committee to adjust farm payment limitations and curb excesses of the current system. Fortenberry says an effective payment limitation system would allow for savings that could be redirected to help new emerging trends in agricultural diversification, ag-based energy production, and conservation efforts. And finally today, don't fix what's not broken, three grain organizations said in a statement sent to USDA this week. The National Grain and Feed Association, North American Export Grain Association, and Grain Elevator and Processing Society say that the existing U.S. grain standards for soybeans serve the market well and they should not be changed. The statement came in response to a request for comments from USDA's Grain Inspection, Packers, and Stockyards Administration as part of the review it conducts on grain standards every 5 years. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason. I've been meaning to talk to you for quite some time now about a subject that I think is important not only for rural America, but for the nation as a whole. It's volunteerism. Now, I happen to work for an organization that's driven in great part by volunteers, University of Illinois Extension, 4-H, and the volunteers that serve that organization. But there are lots of places to volunteer across this great nation of ours. I volunteer in several of those places, and I'm hoping that you do too. If you don't, here's what I want you to do. Think about your strengths. What do you do well? Maybe you take photos. Maybe you design websites. Maybe you're really good with budgets. Maybe you're blessed with leadership skills. Any of those things that you do really well. Maybe you bake well. Maybe you make the best barbecue around. Maybe you are really good with kids and you'd make a great coach for baseball or soccer or any type of sport. Volunteering can be really good for your community, and it sure makes you feel great. I hope you take the time to volunteer today. Just do it. Volunteer today because it's important for your community, your neighborhood, your kids, your church, your school, whatever organization you decide to make personally yours. You can volunteer. I know you can. I do. And I feel great about it each and every day. Now back to the plan of action for the day. Up next, we'll talk a little bit about glyphosate-resistant weeds and how they've increased both in acreage infested and the number of weed species with resistant populations. I'll tell you why water hemp in Illinois may soon be added to that list.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Two weeds recently labeled glyphosate-resistant around the nation are water hemp and giant ragweed. University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager says they were initially identified in Missouri and Ohio. And while Illinois farmers have dealt with glyphosate-resistant populations of horseweed, otherwise known as marestail, for several years, these other glyphosate-resistant summer annual weeds have been confined outside the state's borders. That soon will no longer officially be the case. Weed scientists at the University of Illinois recently have worked with an Illinois water hemp population that has demonstrated greatly reduced sensitivity to glyphosate. It's altogether likely that this population will be labeled glyphosate resistant. Aaron Hager says this water hemp population is hard to kill with the chemical.
Looking across the rates, our typical 1x rate of glyphosate, 0.75 pounds of acid equivalent, anywhere from 7 to 21 days after either of the two application timings, we would indicate about 30% control of that population. It was not a uniform population in that we were able to actually control a small percentage of the plants at even that low, relatively low glyphosate dose, but again, only about 30% were controlled. The remainder of the population appeared to be virtually unaffected at that particular rate. We doubled that rate, now up to about a pound and a half, which would constitute pretty close to a maximum label rate of glyphosate per application. And our control only increased to perhaps 40%.
So there's at least one population of water hemp, and probably more in Illinois, that will be declared glyphosate resistant. There's more bad news, says Hager. Field research suggests this particular water hemp population is also resistant to ALS-inhibiting herbicides like many others in the state. and potentially to foliar-applied triazine and PPO-inhibiting herbicides. In soybeans, that's everything you can throw at water hemp, and if it's duplicated in other places around the state, then there is a real set of troubles on the horizon.
We do know that we do have more than one population in Illinois in water hemp that is resistant to the foliar-applied diphenyl ether herbicide. So in those cases, say hypothetically, if we would find populations that we can't control effectively with glyphosate, may be already resistant to the PPO-inhibiting herbicides, then we really essentially have no foliar or post-emergence herbicide options for soybeans in those scenarios.
Nothing to use today or tomorrow. Hager says he is unaware of any new herbicide active ingredients for post-emergence use in soybean that are being developed by the herbicide manufacturing industry. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. On a Monday afternoon, we're joined by Wyatt Muse of the Andersons here in Champaign County to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Wyatt.
Afternoon, Todd.
You know, I had a question earlier from a couple of folks wondering why all the planes were in the air at this time of year. Something a little new and different. We do see planes and helicopters occasionally spraying. The crop dusters are out. But what are you hearing from the folks here in Champaign County?
Well, a lot more commercial grain producers are spending the extra money this year to protect their corn crop. In years past, you usually only see that going on seed corn acres or sometimes specialty acres, but with corn prices being higher, people have a little bit more at stake and they're willing to spend the extra money on it. Fungicide, I would have to say, is the leader that's going on by airplane and helicopter right now. There have been a little bit of the rootworm beetles and Japanese beetles being sprayed by planes, but I'd say that's just an add-on. If someone's got a little bug pressure, they're going to go ahead and put some Warrior or any other insecticide in the tank mix with the fungicide.
Okay.
One thing that is maybe a downfall of the fungicide, we noticed last year, the acres that had it sprayed on don't dry down nearly as quickly as without. That plant health just hangs on right till the end and leaves a little bit of moisture in the corn. But I'd say it also helps with the test weight, and certainly most people are seeing a yield increase out of it and going forward with using it again.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the cash grain market in your area.
Well, the boards looks like we're taking some activity here. It's going to frame us up before Thursday. The USDA is going to come out with their next supply and demand estimate, and the bias is that we're going to see more corn out there than what we originally thought. Exports were pretty weak today on corn also, and the exact opposite of that on the beans. We've seen robust soybean exports, which we definitely need coming off such a high output year last year. And so looks like the speculators are in selling a little bit of corn and buying some beans. Basis-wise, not a lot of activity today. Last week we saw the wheat basis collapse. The fall soybean basis really started to fall apart after that last acreage estimate talked about quite a few more soybean acres, or quite a few less soybean acres out there rather than what we had originally thought. So I'd say basis is pretty flat right now. Fall basis looking to stay weak and possibly get worse. With the rains coming through this week, I would expect some more cash sales to be made as people get more comfortable with their crop, and that will certainly pressure basis.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 329, cash beans, 825, cash wheat, 519.
We appreciate you being with us.
Mm-hmm.
Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons. Somebody from that office right here in Champaign County joins us each and every Monday afternoon to take a look at what's happening in the cash grain market. In 2 minutes, the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley says state lawmakers in Springfield need to put their egos aside and hash out a budget compromise. Speaking at a news conference today in Chicago, Daley says he thinks legislative leaders are getting closer to an agreement on the state's budget. Daley says legislators also need to ensure the state has an adequate public transit system. He says public transit is a vital need for economic development. It could be 4 to 6 weeks before two-way traffic is restored on a stretch of I-74 in McLean County. A bridge on the highway near Downs was badly damaged after a tanker truck crashed and burned there Saturday afternoon. The accident killed the truck driver, 71-year-old Ralph Colibus of Mattoon. IDOT spokesman Mike Claffey says eastbound traffic on I-74 near Downs could be restored with minimal repairs, but damage to the westbound lanes will require motorists to use an alternate route for a month or more until repairs are completed. A convicted bookie testified today at Chicago's biggest mob trial in years and told jurors that he paid as much as $400,000 in street tax over 25 years of working as a bookmaker. Joel Glickman's testimony comes after he was sent to jail for a week rather than testified against reputed mob boss Frank Calabrese Sr. Former Indiana Congressman Jill Long Thompson plans to formally announce a run for governor tomorrow. She'll join two other Democrats seeking their party's nomination, Indiana Senate Minority Leader Richard Young of Milltown and Indianapolis architect Jim Schellinger. Some Indiana legislators support a statewide ban on smoking in most enclosed public places. Democratic State Representative Charlie Brown of Gary says he supports the concept, but he wants casinos to be exempt, because a ban could reduce casino tax revenue. The American Cancer Society says at least 23 states have enacted smoke-free laws. Today's the day when shareholders of the Chicago Board of Trade's parent company vote on its long-proposed merger with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Approval of the deal is considered likely. That will create a new company that's expected to move to a single trading location at the Board of Trade headquarters. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is WILL Urbana. We're joined on this Monday afternoon by the folks up at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Josh Darr on the line with us. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
Your debut. Thanks much for joining us today. You're a new meteorologist there at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago office?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's test you out. Tell me what we're going to have over the next couple of days right here in the Midwest.
Sure. Well, we're currently tracking a frontal boundary here, actually a prefrontal trough moving across southern Wisconsin, and we're seeing lots of pop-up thunderstorms here across the healthy part of the Corn Belt and in Illinois here today. We'll continue to see this type of convective activity today, and then into tomorrow, the front will come through, and that will bring kind of a reprieve to these somewhat muggy and above-normal temperatures we're experiencing today, and then cooler temperatures through the rest of the week, running slightly below normal to normal here through the early part of the weekend.
Precip coming along with it?
Precip is coming along with it, although probably not as much as one would like. You can use I-80 as really the delineator here between healthy levels of precipitation to the south, 65-70% coverage of the Corn Belt south of I-80. But the northern areas of north of I-80, less precipitation, 15-20%. And that continues to be a problem here with the northern part of the belt, particularly as you look out into Iowa, Minnesota. It's been dry, and we're growing increasingly concerned with the dryness out there over the past 30, 45 days.
Very quickly, on the 65% coverage south of I-80, we're talking about a half, a quarter, an inch? What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's 65% greater than 3/10 of an inch, and certainly you're going to find areas that are higher, half an inch plus, but broadly speaking, 65% coverage greater than a third of an inch.
Tell me a little bit more about Minnesota. They're under the gun to produce a lot of corn this year, number four corn producing in the state, but they're really moving up. I think maybe a million bushels is what we're looking for out of them.
Yeah, and certainly Minnesota and northwestern Iowa are healthy portions of the belt where we look for a substantial amount of corn production, and it's been dry there, and if you look longer out, say into next week, we see the ridge of high pressure that's featured over the Intermountain West bringing and shattering numbers of records in that portion of the country, starting to move a bit east and centered rather than Intermountain West towards the northern plains, and that will bring heat into this region, a lack of precipitation, and certainly I think you could say that the corn yields at the high right now, and as we move through the next several weeks, you'll start to see a decline in potential growth.
Well, the heat is on. Tell me about some other areas around the globe. Are you up to date on China?
Sure. China is interesting, particularly the southern regions of the Corn Belt and the winter wheat belt there. Just tremendous amount of precipitation over the past 7 days. We're talking 10, 15, 20 inches of rain, and that's going to cause problems for that agriculture belt. The northern regions where you have prime corn and soybean country, still an active pattern there, and they're receiving healthy amounts of precipitation, but the southern regions of the ag belt is certainly an area of significant concern at this point.
And Josh, one final question for you as we put you up on the podcast. I need to know how to spell your last name.
Josh Darr, D-A-R-R.
That's what I have down. Thanks much, Josh. We appreciate it. Great
job. Thanks, Todd.
Josh Darr is a new meteorologist at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You can hear him on the podcast if you want right there on our website. It'll be up as an MP3 file and as a podcast at willag.org. Be sure to visit there. Sign up for our weekend newsletter. That's absolutely free. It's a great one. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.